out of the ether the good providence of God that again makes it possible for us to assemble in His presence to study His Word. And I trust that the determination and the purpose to study His Word in all honesty and sincerity in an effort to know the truth about the matters that are being discussed may characterize every one of us. That we may have come with that degree of humility and reverence in our hearts, free from any personal or selfish interest that might otherwise influence us, to simply receive the truth of God as it has been revealed to us in His Word. In the beginning tonight, I want to deal with some of the matters that were covered in Brother Wood's last speech and that were referred to in the discussion last night. Brother Woods, in his speech last night, engaged in several statements, or made several statements, that are clear and definite misrepresentations of me. I'm not charging that he intended to misrepresent me, but I am charging that the statements that he made are misrepresentation, and I want to correct them in the beginning. He accused me in the first place of saying that children could be the wards of the church in the debate at Birmingham. What I said was, in the passage to which he referred, on page 90, I believe it is, in the Cogdell Woods debate, they can oversee the care, talking about the elders of the church, and when they place a child in a private home, a destitute child, with the agreement that they will pay that home to take care of that child, that child is still under the control of the elders of the church. And if it isn't properly cared for, they can take it out of that home and put it somewhere where it can be cared for. They don't have to have that kind of oversight, but they don't have that kind of oversight in the kind of home you are talking about. Now, the word ward does not occur in that passage. There's several definitions. I don't know what he had in mind when he said that I believe that children can be the ward of the church. If he used the term in a legal sense, I deny that I had anything remotely connected with it in mind. Now, he can tell us how he used it, but I didn't use the word ward, and Brother Woods ought not to put it in my mouth. I was talking about the care that the church exercised over children, for which it was responsible. In the second place, he said that I took the position in my book, Walking by Faith, that one example of a thing being done in the New Testament makes it binding to do it that way. And he made that statement in connection with the matter of observing the Lord's Supper on the third floor or the third story of a building. Now, there's a whole chapter in that book devoted to the proposition of what makes an example binding. The uniformity with which it occurs, the singularity of its occurrence, is only one point in that chapter. And to say that I said that that's the only rule by which it can be determined, or that that's the sole determination of it, and to make no distinction between the matter of incidentals and the matter of essentials is a plain misrepresentation of what that chapter teaches. And I so charge. I don't know whether he hasn't studied it carefully enough to know what is in the chapter or not. But the matter of observing the Lord's Supper on the third floor, any other floor, or any other locality is a matter incidental, not a matter essential. And Jesus so taught in John 4. Where the Lord's Supper is observed, whether in Jerusalem or on this mountain or where God is worshipped, is a matter entirely and purely incidental. So from other testimony, aside from the example in Acts 20 and 7, we know that where the Lord's Supper is observed is of no consequence. When Brother Woods preaches on conversions, he knows the difference between matters incidental and matters essential. And he ought to know that I know the difference between matters incidental and matters essential. So let's not make any incidental binding, whether it occurs once in an example or a dozen times in an example. And then another thing, he used the expression, pay a home. I talked about in the above quoted statement from the Birmingham debate about the elders of the church paying a home. And he wanted to know if I thought to pay the house. And seemed to attribute to me in his statement the idea or the conception that the only definition of the word home is a house. Well, I'm not guilty of making that kind of a blunder. I know that that's one of them. I defined the term home and pointed out the four different senses in one chart. in which the word home is used, and it sometimes does mean a house, and it's used in the Bible. It sometimes means a family. It sometimes means a family plus household servants. It sometimes is used, that is the same term in the original, the same root word in the original is used to designate a family estate. And so it's used in all four of these senses. And I don't know what he had in mind when he attributed it to me and asked me, do you mean pay a house? Well, of course I didn't mean pay a house. And I think plain honesty and representation on your part, guy, would force you to admit that you knew that I didn't mean pay a house. I was talking about a family. Paying a family. Yes, the word home sometimes denotes a family. I argued that in the Birmingham debate. I'll argue it in this one. It's one of the definitions of it, not the only one. And the authorities say that it is a metaphorical use of the term home, which means that the primary use of it is a place of habitation, a residence. But it can and does mean the other. And the definition that he recognizes, I'm certain still, is the one that he used in the Birmingham debate. On page 35, it includes the idea of a house. From Winston's dictionary, one's fixed residence or dwelling place. The dwelling place is the home. And he went on to quote, hence the unit of society formed by a family living together. And so the word home includes the idea of a place of residence. But I had in mind, in the statement to which he referred, and I don't see how he could possibly escape the fact that I had in mind, the family, paying the home in the sense of a family. Well, all right. He accused me again of changing positions. He said that in the Birmingham debate, that I took the position that the church could care for destitute children. Well, now, guy, I just dare you, challenge you, every inch of you, all the way up and down, to find a statement that I ever made that's in print, that I ever wrote, in which I denied that the church can take care of destitute children. Now, it's fine. I haven't changed my position on that. I still believe it. I said to you that if you want to debate the matter of for whom the church can care, if you want to affirm that the church out of its contribution or out of its treasury can carry on a general program of benevolence among aliens as opposed to saints, I'll be glad to deny that, and we'll discuss it under that proposition. That isn't the proposition we're debating now. We're not discussing the question of what class of needy people the church can care for. Doesn't matter in our proposition what class of needy people the church is caring for. Can the church build benevolent organizations to care for any class of needy people? That's what we're debating about, or supposed to be debating about. I haven't succeeded in getting him to do it yet. And nobody else that's met him has succeeded in getting him to do it. He refuses to discuss properly the matter of the churches of Christ building benevolent organizations to do this work of caring. He talks a lot about the home and a lot about everything else, but avoids and evades and turns and twists to keep from discussing the matter of the churches of Christ building benevolent organizations. But we shall have some more to say about that in a little while. Now then, the next misrepresentation, and this is the most uncalled for one of the whole business, he said the position is $5 can be paid for feeding the preacher's lawn, but not 25 cents for milk for an orphan child. That is out of the church treasury. And he said drinking fountains and beds for convenience can be provided in the church building, but out of the church treasury, you can't furnish a bed for a destitute child that doesn't have one. Now, guy, who believes it? Who believes it? I don't believe it, and if you're accusing me of it, you're just plain falsifying about it. I know of no other way to put it. That's just a falsehood from the start to the finish of it. I don't believe it. I never said it. It's a false accusation. And I just don't know of this church ever taking any such position. But he turned around when he made that kind of misrepresentation and said, that's this fellow's position. He accused me and attributed to me the position that you can spend out of the church treasury $5 to feed the preacher's lawn, but out of the church treasury you can't spend 25 cents to buy milk for a starving, destitute child. I resent it. I don't believe anything of the kind. It's false. It isn't so. And don't say it again now, because you know it isn't so. Well, we look at some of the other matters that were covered in the debate last night. He says that it's not a matter of authority. I presented several charts, five of them I believe, in fact, on the matter of authority, emphasizing the fact that such benevolent organizations as we have under discussion in our proposition, and you heard it read, as are built by the churches of Christ to do the work of benevolence, that these organizations are not authorized in New Testament scriptures. I pointed out how that authority was to be established. I pointed out how we distinguish between things that are generic and things that are specific. I pointed out how there is a difference between things that are essential and matters of expediency, and I pointed out the difference between aids and additions. And then pointed out what coordinates are. That seeing is a coordinate with plague. God specified seeing. That eliminates the idea of plague. There isn't any authority for it. That the missionary society under the generic teach is a coordinate with the congregation, God's organization, the local church. And that God specified the local church is the pillar and the ground of the truth as the organization for the furtherance and the propagation of it. And that therefore the missionary society is unauthorized. And that that's the thing that's wrong with it. There isn't any authority for it. Then I suggested that God has specified the church, and the organization of the church again is the congregation, to do the work of relieving, and relieve is generic. The coordinate with the congregation, the local church again, is the benevolent society, which is our subject in this discussion. When he came to the stand for his next speech, he said, Brother Cogdill wasted his time. There isn't any question in this matter about authority. We agree on how to establish it. Well, that is just one point that we covered. But now if he means to endorse all that I said from those charts on a matter of authority, I'm happy to hear him do it. We're making some progress. If this question and the issue in this question is a matter of what the Bible authorizes in the way of an organization and what it doesn't authorize, we're getting along. And we may be able to make a lot more progress if we can just agree on that now, and if he meant to do that, why, certainly we have already made some, and we ought to make a great deal more. He said about it this, and that it's not a matter of authority. The church can't do anything without authority. Well, then the church can't build benevolent organizations without authority, can it? To take care of anybody, young or old. He said the church can't perform an act that is divine in its nature without divine authority. Well, then the church can't build human organizations to do the work of relieving the needy for whom it is responsible if that is a divine act without divine authority, can't it? It has to have divine authority. And then he said again, I believe the sole source of authority is in the scripture. Well, so do I. I believe the church has to have authority for anything that it does, and that the only way to obtain it is from the Word of God. And if he agrees, as he said he did, with the fact that there are just three ways that the Bible authorizes anything, command or precept, approved apostolic example, and necessary inference. And that's the chart with which he said he had no argument. He agreed with it in Birmingham. He's agreed with it here. Then Brother Woods is under obligation to do something about it from the viewpoint of producing authority for what he's trying to defend, either by a precept, by an approved example, or by a necessary inference. He needs to produce the passage in the Word of God that will find the authority for these benevolent organizations built by churches of Christ about which this discussion hinges. First, the church is under obligation to provide for the needs of destitute children. Second, among the need is a home, he says, a family relationship. Of course, what he's talking about is a substitute for a family relationship. Third, in order to provide for such a home, a benevolent organization is necessary. He's argued that you can't do it without it. And in the next place, fourth, he said this benevolent organization can be built to provide for this substitute family relationship. It can be built by the churches of Christ. And fifth, if such building of this benevolent organization is a divine act, and he says that it is divine, the institution is divine, then Brother Woods is under obligation to furnish scriptural authority for the church building such an organization in one of three ways. Now, guy, don't forget it. We want the passage. You cited a lot of passages. But I'm not asking, and this proposition does not cry out for a scripture showing that the church has an obligation to provide for the needs of the destitute. That isn't what we're debating about. We're not asking for scriptures showing that some substitute for the family relationship is a part of that need. I suppose everybody's aware of the fact that those who aren't able to care for themselves need somebody to care for them. In the place of parents or in the place of anybody else that otherwise would in the family relationship. I suppose everybody understands that those who are destitute of a place need a place for shelter. I suppose that everybody knows that those who are destitute of clothes and food and medicine or whatever else they need, the necessary things of life, have to have that provided for. We don't want scripture showing the necessity of that, and that's all he's produced. You look back over the list, that's all he's produced. But what we need is the scripture that authorizes the church, the churches of Christ, to build benevolent organizations. Build and maintain benevolent organizations. Now, don't forget to produce that passage, and when you do, make it clear that that's the one upon which you depend for authority, Brother Woods, and you'll do all of us a big favor. In the next place, he talked about sending funds to a group and asked me if I believed in sending funds to a group. And I told him no, not without some modification of the group. It'd depend on who the group was and how the group was operating. And when he came forward in his speech, he said, now, it seems to me like there's an example in the Bible of sending funds to a group. And he went to Acts 11, 27 and 30, where they sent the relief from Antioch down to the brethren in Judea and sent it to the hands of the elders. And very facetiously, he said, I thought I was under the impression that elders constituted a group. Well, elders go to make up, they are a constituent part of, to use a favorite expression, the church. Now, if you meant that I believe in sending funds to a church that was in need, why didn't you say church, guys? I could have answered that question directly, forthrightly. I would have known what you meant. But now, if sending funds to a group of elders is equivalent to sending funds to just any kind of a group operating in any fashion, and that's your example of it, if this justifies sending to a board of directors for benevolent purposes, then it would justify sending to a board of directors for evangelistic purposes. If not, why not? If elders are parallel to a board of directors of some society, either benevolent, aren't evangelistic, it'll justify one just as much as the other. In the next place, he had a good deal to say about buying services. And if you understood exactly what he meant by some of the things he said, you're farther ahead in the matter than I am. In the first place, he said, whose work is it? And that is, when you buy services, whose work is it? If it isn't the work of the church, then they don't need to buy it. If it is the work of the church, it can be put in the budget. If it's its own work, why buy it? If someone else is, what is the church doing buying it? And if you get any impression out of that that's even halfway equivalent to mine, it simply means that he's confusing the proposition of things that the church may need to carry on its work that are essential in carrying on its work with the work of the church itself. To illustrate, the church buys building material. But the church doesn't contribute to a lumber business, nor does the church go into the lumber business. The church buys lights, but the church doesn't contribute to the electric light and power company, nor does it go into the operation of one. The church buys water. Couldn't do baptizing without it under present arrangements. But the church doesn't constitute nor organize a water district and go into the water furnishing business. nor does it contribute to the water district. The church buys hospital care for a needy, destitute, ill saint. But the church does not contribute to, nor does it go into the hospital business when it does so. Now, if buying service is equivalent to a contribution, and the church can buy service from a Catholic hospital, then can the church contribute to a Catholic hospital? If not, why not? If not, why not? Then he quoted again from Walking by Faith, and he said, Cogdell says the church can't furnish entertainment. And he seemed to be critical of that, but he turned right around before he got through with his speeches last night and says that he doesn't believe that it can either. Well, then what are you picking faults with my book for? You don't believe that the church can furnish entertainment and isn't in the entertainment and recreation business? Why did you get on what I said? I don't believe it. And that's what I was trying to teach. But he turns around again and says, I don't believe the church is in the entertainment business, that it can furnish entertainment, but he says the church can furnish the money to the board of directors of an institutional home and to the superintendent, and they can go buy the facilities for entertainment. Well, what's the difference in the two? And then he tried to make entertainment and recreation an essential need in the matter of benevolence among those who are children. And, of course, he fails to make that stand out. Everybody knows that isn't so, that he's wrong about that. They're not essential to the well-being of a child. A child needs recreation and play, but marbles are not necessary even to playing and recreation. And a football isn't, and a ball and a glove isn't. Everybody knows that a child can improvise and can play without all of these things, and that it isn't in the realm of benevolence at all, nor is it in the realm of things necessary and essential to existence. Then he raised the question with me, what does it mean to build and organize? And I defined that for him in my proposition. That isn't the definition of the terms. To organize, to establish, to bring into existence, to perpetuate, to sustain their order and activity, to supply the means of their existence. Buying services is not included in it. Buying services is not included in it. But he said you can buy toys out of the preacher's money for his children. The preacher can, but can't furnish toys for destitute children. Now, either by that he meant to imply that the preacher's salary is benevolence, that it's in the realm of charity. When the Bible puts it in the realm of wages and pay, buying services and paying for services rendered, uses the very term that carries that significance in 1 Corinthians 9 and again in 2 Corinthians 11, 7 and 8. Or, if his argument or statement amounted to anything, it meant that whatever the preacher can spend his money for, that the church pays him as wages, the church can spend its money for it in providing for the destitute. And the more ridiculous position was never occupied by anybody. Now, in Galatians 6, he said that must apply to the church because the letter is addressed to churches of Christ. Does that mean everything in a letter addressed to a church? Is church activity? Is that your point, guy? Is that your argument? If so, then I suppose when Paul in Galatians 5 was talking about individual Christians walking after the flesh and committing the sin of adultery, that he wasn't talking about the fleshly act of adultery. It was spiritual adultery only on the part of the church. And when he mentioned drunkenness, he was talking about the church getting drunk. Why, that's directed to the individual, and you know it is. And then when he talked in Galatians 5 about circumcision, would that be the circumcising of the church? Or would it be a church activity? Would it, guy? If everything in a letter, because it's directed to the churches, is church activity, you're going to run into a lot of trouble. But he said, now one phrase, communicate unto him that teacheth, and that obligation, if that's individual, that means the church can't do it. No, it doesn't mean anything of the kind. And that's the same treatment of the Word of God that every sectarian preacher I've ever met in debate has used. If baptism is essential, then it doesn't mean that faith is necessary. That's the old idea. Why, there are other passages that teach the necessity of faith, and there are other passages that teach that the church ought to support the preacher for preaching. But this passage doesn't happen to be the one that deals with the church, does it? And then he made the ridiculous statement that it means every time you're taught, you've got to teach, or you've got to pay right then for the teaching. And, of course, that's just one of his statements for which there isn't any reason or a revelation. But he says Cogdell opposes the organization. Only when it's built and maintained by the churches of Christ, guy. I don't oppose organization. You know that. and everybody else knows it. I oppose benevolent organizations when they're built and maintained by the churches of Christ as an agency to do the work of caring for the needy. He says he denies the right of these organizations to exist. I deny their right to exist only when built and maintained by churches of Christ. That's my proposition. That's what I'm discussing. That's what I'm discussing. And that's what I'm trying to get him to discuss, but I haven't been able to get him to do it yet. He hasn't walked up to the issue at all. Well, he says the scriptures do not authorize on one of the charts or in reply to one of the charts, the scriptures do not authorize the church to provide a husband for the widow. Well, where's the scripture that authorizes the church to provide in loco parentis for the children? It authorizes the relief of them in their distress and in their want. It authorized the visitation, which means to give aid in time of distress in the straits of want. But where is the passage that authorizes one and by, I'll do exactly like you do, I'll approve the other? We just use your kind of logic and your treatment on that matter. But he says the widow doesn't have to have a husband. That isn't necessary to her existence. Well, Paul said the younger widows ought to marry and bear children. And he would that they would do so. But Guy says you'll buy them a television set instead. And they'll get along better and be happier. He implied that because some of them are unhappy that have husbands. And so a television set is essential to her existence. But a husband or a home or a family relationship isn't. Then he said a family or a home is the thing under discussion. And the president and the vice president and the secretary treasurer are simply comparable to a church building and to trustees. Who is the head of this family? This family that you're talking about. Who is the head of it? Is the president, the vice president, the secretary treasurer? Who is the head of it? And whom did God ordain to be the head of that divine family that you're talking about? Why, the father or the husband? And you know, some of our homes have two families. We've got one home that has two families under the same daddy. And both of them wearing different names and living in different places. That'd be, I guess, bigamy and benevolence. It looks a little like it might be. And then you have, he said, the Gospel Guardian organization is the same kind of an organization. Legally, that's so. Yes, built by the churches, it isn't so. Thank you. And there are a good many things involved in that that we need to keep fixed in our minds. I pointed two of the essential ones out. And that is that the Gospel Guardian organization and the Gospel Guardian paper are two different things. Now he gets up here and talks about the organization, and then he reads the masthead on the paper. Well, let's look at it. The corporation and the paper are not the same, just as the corporation and the home are not the same. The corporation furnishes the paper as a method of teaching, and the corporation, his corporation, furnishes a home as a method of benevolence. The Gospel Guardian Corporation is a private business. An enterprise engaged in business for profit. That is, trying to sustain itself by making a profit on the services that it rendered. He had a good deal to say about a church that had it in its budget for $900. Well, Guy, that $900 was not a contribution, and don't you imply that it was, because you'll imply another falsehood when you do. No contribution there. It is for services rendered for literature bought, just like when they buy it from the Gospel Advocate. Do they contribute to the Advocate? When they send in money for subscriptions, or send in money to have the paper sent to somebody, or send in money to buy literature, that $900 that you're talking about was for services rendered, for materials bought, for literature bought. And it's all right for a church to do that. I wouldn't deny that. He said he'd be, the Guardian Company would be glad if every church. Well, of course we'd be glad to have the patronage of every church. And so would the Advocate, and Guy Woods has written in the paper that nobody who in any way sympathizes with the position that he and the Advocate occupy ought to do business with any other publishing company. He's even trying to draw the line against doing business with anybody else. I thank you.
Brother? Reverend moderators, Brother Cockville, ladies and gentlemen, I rejoice that in God's good providence I'm privileged to be before you again tonight. I shall take up Brother Cockville's speech item by item and statement by statement. And I have observed this particularly, that on last evening we gave him lots to do. He's made no progress whatsoever tonight. He felt so keenly the necessity of attempting to patch up his effort last evening that he spent his entire speech tonight dealing with it. Well, we're glad. We think it deserved that. But we'll show you that he's even in worse condition than he was on last evening. Now, I have some questions for him, first of all. And I hope that he will pay some attention to them, at least make some effort to answer them, at least better than last evening. Number one, please cite the scripture which authorizes the church to build a systematic arrangement for the care of destitute saints. Number two, when this arrangement is built by the church, is it another church, a home which is an integral part of a church, or a home which is not an integral part of a church? Now, that's getting it out specifically. That doesn't leave any ground for ambiguity that he complained about last evening. It either is or isn't. Let him say which. Number three, can a child be adequately provided for without having or being a part of a home? And I have, in parentheses, following the word home, a unit of society. I have defined it. Number four, when the church makes a donation to a needy Christian family, does it discharge its work, the work of the family? Neither, or both? State which. Now that seems specific too, at least to me. Number five. What passage or passages authorize the church to provide for the needs of orphan children? He said he believes in it. We shall see what passages he thinks sustains that view. Number six. What passage or passages authorize an individual to practice institutionalism in a human institution? Now, he believes in practicing institutionalism in his institution, which is a human institution. Now, I'm asking for the passage that authorizes such. Now, friends, I have no disposition whatsoever to misrepresent Brother Cogwell. I'm in this debate for the purpose of trying to arrive at the truth. And I feel sure that I am as honest as he's trying to be. At least I think I am. And if I misrepresent him at any point, I want him to call our attention to it. I'll do my best to state clearly what the situation is. But I have not misrepresented Brother Cogdell in these instances, and I shall prove to you that I haven't. He said that I charged upon him that children are wards of the church. I didn't say that Brother Cogdell used the word wards. I pointed out last night that we surely wouldn't quibble over the meaning of that word wards. But I mean by the word wards those who are in the custody of elders. That's what I meant by it. And I made it clear in the context in which it appeared. In the Birmingham debate, Brother Cogdell argued that that's what was wrong with the orphan homes. The elders lost custody of the children. Now you may say that it's not necessary for you to have custody of the children to provide care for them. Listen to this statement regarding Title 49 of Section 78 of the Code of Alabama. For 1940, and this will be characteristic of the laws of most states, including the state of Texas and Tennessee, the Code of Alabama of 1940 makes it a criminal offense for any person to take custody of any child under the age of 16 years unless the person taking custody is related to that child within the second degree. A second degree relative would be a brother or sister or grandparent. Without obtaining either a license as a state agency or as a court custody order from a court having jurisdiction. Now, before you can provide for children, you must have that legal custody. That is, provide 24-hour-a-day care. The church can't do that, Cogdell says. I say it can't, too. Therefore, it must be in a home. Since the church is obligated to provide for people who are destitute, then these destitute people must be put in a home where the church supports them, but in a home, not a church. Cogdill is on record in the, on page 23 of the Birmingham debate that the church can provide every need of an orphan child, one of which is custody. But he says now, he denies that, if we mean by the word wards, the legal definition. Well, I mean by that the legal definition of custody, that is, in the care of the elders, legally. That's what I mean by it. Now, Brother Cogdill, you are the one who misrepresented the facts in that case. Let me read the statement here. They can oversee the care. And when they place a child in a private home, a destitute child, with the agreement that they will pay that home to take care of that child, the child is still under the control of the elders of the church. Now, if that's not in their custody, I don't know what it is. It's got to be in order to be legal. Now, Cogdill, you're in difficulty on that in the worst way. That's the truth on it. He said that I misrepresented him with reference to saying that he used an expression about an example. One example becomes a binding pattern. Now, you decide for yourself. Here is the statement, page 22. In Walking by Faith, he said, if there are two or more examples of methods of doing the same thing, then either would be permissible under the same circumstances now, and we would have a choice in the matter based upon expediency. But the question with which we are concerned in this lesson is this. When there is an example of but one method of doing a thing in the New Testament scriptures, is that one example exclusive of all other methods or practices? And then he proceeds for the rest of the chapter to try to prove that. Now, that's what you said, Brother Cogdill. Why get up here and deny it? You must have known that we'd read it. He said, what do you mean about talking about paying a home? He said, I believe a home is a family. Well, fine, I do too. But you've got young fellows running around all over this country denying that. That's the reason I introduced it. They're saying all over the country that a home is a house. I'm glad you know better than that. I listened to a tape recording of a debate that was held a few weeks ago. Down in either Mississippi or Alabama, I don't remember the place. But at any rate, the fellow took the position, and he's here tonight, that the word home means a house. That's exactly what they all believe, except Cogdill. At least all I've heard talk about it. But to stay in this debate, he has to get up here and deny that. He said, of course I believe that it has reference to a family. Well, wonderful. Then when we talk about restoring the home, you'll agree that we have reference to restoring or reestablishing a family relationship. And since a family is a divine institution, then a child can have its family relationship restored. But that's not the church. He said, I said that he didn't believe that children, destitute children, might be provided for by the church. Well, I'll tell you in a few moments why I thought he didn't believe that. He turned right around and said, Well, I will deny that the church can assist those who are not Christians. You notice he didn't say he'd affirm. These fellows never affirm any position. They'll make affirmative speeches in the negative, but they won't affirm anything. They haven't got anything to affirm. He'd deny. Well, now then, how could he deny the one if he believes the former? If he believes the church can provide for destitute children, why will he deny that the church can care for destitute children? He turns right around and said he'll deny it, in a general sense. Well, now, Brother Cogdill, one of the other statements is true. He says, first, I misrepresented him with reference to the matter of taking money out of the treasury to feed the grass on the preacher's lawn, but it was sinful to provide milk for a non-Christian, that is, an orphan baby. He said, now, that's a flat misrepresentation. He said, further, I don't know of anybody else that believes it. Now, brethren, I'm made to wonder what you fellows sitting out there think of that statement. I would like to ascribe to this audience the average intelligence that I possess. And I would like to believe that you want to know what's right, and that you want to be honest and sincere in these matters. But when a man gets up before us and makes a statement that surely anybody in the crowd knows is not in harmony with the facts, I'm made to wonder what he thinks of your intelligence. He not only said he didn't believe that, but he doesn't know of anybody else that does. The debate that I listened to between Brother Tom O'Neill and Brother Albert Hill set out that position. I have here the Wallace Holt debate. Page 86. There is this statement. Where is the passage? This is Holt. Where is the passage that authorizes the church, the local congregation, from its treasury to relieve anyone but a saint? You can't miss that, friends. You have a man to do it. If it can be done, he can do it. We're not asking him to prove it by the budget, nor by the inconsistencies of somebody, nor by what somebody said in the paper. That doesn't prove a thing. We're asking for divine authority. The implication being that there is no divine authority for that. Now, he doesn't know anybody that takes that position. The gospel guardian has set it out time and again. In weeks past, months past, I can produce case after case where they've taught that. But to cap the climax, a few weeks ago, I heard Roy Cogdell make the same statement in a speech at Kenneth, Missouri. The same statement that Holt has here. Now, I won't say it's the same verbiage, but it's the same meaning. That is, he took the position that the church is not authorized with the scriptures to help anybody except the saint. That's what he took the position. Now, Cogdell, I got the tape recording of it, and I got it in my room over yonder motel. I'll produce it here tomorrow night. We'll see who's telling the truth about this. I don't understand his attitude. All right. Now, he says, with reference to the chart here, that we're authorized to sing. And that singing excludes instrumental music, and we all know that. That's very true. Because the word sing is a specific, but the word relieve is a generic. The scriptures do not specify the manner or mode of relief. And if relieve in 1 Timothy 5 and 16 excludes the church, it also, the church from using a home, it also excludes the individual from using a home, because the same word relieve is in the passage. He had it on the board here last night. So if the church can't use a home to relieve, then the individual couldn't use a home to relieve. If not, why not? He said that I agreed with him last night that the church cannot engage in entertainment. Well, I certainly did. But I presented that for the purpose of showing that Cogdell's position is false because, note this, he says the church can provide every need of an orphan child. That is, he has said it in the past. Well, if that be true, one of the needs of a child is entertainment, at least some sort of recreation. If he wants to scoff about that, what about education, some form of it, some teaching? But he says the church can't engage in that. Well, I think the church is not authorized to engage in secular activity. But an orphan child has to have it. But the church can't participate in such. Therefore, the church is not God's child care agency. That's our position exactly. He said, don't you know that Galatians 6 and 10 is in a context that's addressed to individuals? He said, why, of course. The church is obligated to support preaching the gospel, but not in this particular passage. And then he said, with reference to my statement last night that you ought to contribute individually to those who teach it. Well, that's what the passage says. Galatians chapter 6 and 6, let him that's taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth. I said if that context is exclusively individual, then every time you receive instruction, you'd have to contribute privately to the preacher that gave you the instruction, if that's exclusively individual. And besides that, if that's exclusively individual and it includes the Christian, then helping the Christian, then the individual couldn't help the members of the church. If all men there mean those who are not Christians. So he hasn't dealt with that. He says he knows a home among us that has, or two homes among us that has one daddy. Well, I'm not acquainted with what he's referring to. He can tell us more in detail about it. But it strikes me that under those circumstances, the word daddy would be used figuratively. And it'd be better for two homes to have at least one person responsible for them than to have one home without anybody responsible for them. And that's what I'm contending for tonight, that somebody has to be responsible for them. Now, that covers his speech, except for one thing. He said here, he can't get me to discuss the proposition. The proposition says build and maintain. I told him last night to look up the word build in the dictionary. I mean by the word build the same thing that you mean when you say that a man builds a house, when he hires a contractor to do it. He provides the means. That's exactly what I mean by it, and he knew that on last evening. And so he hasn't touched the matter. Well, all right now, I want to show you what our position is. Let's have the lights out. Let's have chart number 18. Chart number 18, please. Now, this is our contention, friends. Note it. We mean by the home, and you can't see it. It's up at the top there. That it is a divine entity. Genesis chapters 1 through 3 authorize, or rather set out, the origin of the home. Its design is to provide food, clothing, shelter, education, medical care, and security. It is sometimes destroyed. Death, disease, desertion, dereliction, divorce, and dementia sometimes cause it to be dissolved. It may be restored. Now let's raise it a little bit if we can, please. When it is restored, it is then a home for the homeless, supplied and supported by the churches of Christ. Now, friends, what is the difference? In a private home, overseen by a Christian couple, that is state-supervised and divinely authorized, and a legal home, that's operated by a group of Christians, that's likewise state-supervised and divinely authorized because it's a home for the homeless. That's the basis of it. Now let's turn, have chart number 20, number 33A. Chart 33A. We introduced these matters on last evening, but we want to emphasize our position just by way of review. We didn't introduce these particular charts. These are others. Now, well, we did this one. Here is the home and the state and the church. These are divine institutions. Sometimes the state fails. We are against combining the church and the state. But sometimes when the home breaks down, these brethren want to combine the church into a home or turn the home into a church or the church into a home, as it may be, and let the church perform the functions of the home. One position is as wrong as the other. Let's have chart number 21. Now here, friends, is the division of work, the title of this chart, the division of the work. Notice here, this represents the church, and the church work is to provide means for fatherless and aged people. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. The church is the only charitable organization for this function here. But then the home is to receive the property and use the means supplied, and this home is a divinely authorized affair, an example of its activity being found in chapter of Acts 4, verses 32 through 35. Now let's have chart number 35. This will show us the right way. The right way. Now note here that when the church apostatized, as it did in the Dark Ages, it was restored, and it may be restored, as we see from the fact that the word is the seed of the king. Sometimes the state may be dissolved, but it may be reestablished. We have authority for the state, Romans 13, 1 to 7. Then when the home is broken up, then the home may be restored, 1 Timothy 5 and 16. In fact, Caldwell took that position last night, and showing that what the sister does, the church may do it instead. Now, not this, when the home is broken, the church operating as a home. Not this, state, when the state is overthrown, the church operating as a state. But when the home is broken up, we may restore the home. That's what the orphan home is. It is the home. All right. Now then, let's have chart number 31. I want to show you that these brethren have recognized that distinction. Here is a chart that appeared in the Gospel Guardian some time back. That will indicate to you that they recognize that there are distinctions between various institutions. Now they have here the church and its function as a spiritual relationship, the community and its social relationships, the government and civil relationships, business enterprise, economic relationships, and the home, a family relationship. Well, that's exactly right. I accept that setup exactly. That's the truth about it.
And you'll note, please, that the distinction between the home, the government, and the church. These brethren want to combine the two. That is, when the home breaks down, he thinks that the church can take over and operate as a part of the church. Now, one other. Chart number 11. And we will have got before you the position that we are defending here. In which of the following institutions are children to be cared for? In a church? Let him tell us either yes or no. In a home? Yes or no. A home which is an integral part of the church? Now, which is? Ask yourselves the question, friends. Which one of these institutions did God ordain to provide for children? You must say it's the home. If so, and if it's possible for a child who's lost its home to have it restored, then that's exactly what we're doing in our orphan homes. Now, that covers the matter thoroughly. His speech, as well as enough negative material to indicate the situation. Now, I want to introduce, as fully as our time will allow, the contradictions that are characteristic of Brother Cogdell's position. He must face up to the difficulties that constitute his position. Now, note here, Cogdell's contradiction number one. Cogdell says that the church is the only organization that orphans need. May we have the lights out, please? We're still presenting these charts. Notice now, he says the church is the only organization that orphans need. He said that in the debate, page 23, and he suggested here in this chart right here. But note now, he said in the speech over at Kennett, and I'm going to produce that, that the church not obligated to orphans as such, only to needy saints. Now, one or the other of those statements is false. And besides that, get this. If the church is not obligated in that field, then the orphan home is not parallel to the missionary society. If the orphan home is not doing the work of the church, then it's not usurping the functions of the church. All right, let's have the next chart. That is the next contradiction. Now, the Cogdell says that they, that is the elders, can oversee the care. The child is still under the control of the elders of the church. That's an exact quote from his statement in the debate, page 90. But he said last night that he categorically denied that orphans can be wards of the church. Now, I want to know if you think that those two statements are inconsistent on my part or his. Be honest, friends. We all got to stand before the judgment one of these days. All right, let's have the next contradiction. Cogdell says the church can't build anything but another church. He says that in Walking by Faith, page 42, and we'll produce these statements, direct quotes from him, if he wants them. Now, of course, we've abbreviated here. Cogdell says the church can perform every need of orphan children. But he also says that an orphan child must have a home. He said tonight that he accepted that. Yet he denies that the church can function as a home. Now, if you can untangle that, you can do better than I can. All right, let's go next. Here, what can the church do? He says in Walking by Faith, page 77, the church can't build anything but another church. But he says that the home that children need is not the church. Yet the church can provide. He says the church can't rear children. But in order to raise children, you've got to rear them, unless he wants to quibble over what the word rear means. Maybe he thinks that one means one thing and something else another. He said that in page 33. But if the church can perform these functions, it can rear children. He said next that the church cannot provide recreation. But you know the children must have some sort of recreation. He said that the church can't teach secular subjects, page 8. The church can't control any home. He said here the elders had control over the children in the home and could take them out if they wanted to. Is that exercising any control at all? He said they can't engage in any business. But yet he says the church is the only institution needed for such work. Now, that's the pitiable, inconsistent position that characterizes Brother Cogdell. All right, let's have the next. He says here that elders cannot oversee anything but the church. Walking by Faith, page 17. But he says that elders can oversee non-members, that is, orphans. He said that in the second deal here tonight, in an arrangement which is not the church. Now, when we ask him, what is this arrangement here? He said it's not the church. He did that to avoid the charge that we made that he was trying to turn the church into a home. And that is, trying to make the church perform the functions of a home. But he couldn't say it was a home. If he did, that'd be another institution. So he wouldn't say it was either. He said it was an arrangement. But then the elders can't oversee an arrangement. The only thing they can oversee is another is a church. Unless the arrangement is a church, is it or not, Cogdell? Is it or not? Now, I'll take more than a little grin. Just put it down and tell us, is it or not?
It's the work of the church.
It's the work of the... So then, So then the church can oversee this arrangement.
Yes,
good. Now that's wonderful. We're getting down to the point where the church can oversee this work of caring for orphans. Fine, let's have the next one. Thank you, Brother Cogdell. We're very glad to have that. Now look, the elders must operate any arrangement which the church supports for orphan children. But he says the elders can't operate anything but another church. All right, then this is a church here then. This work is the work of the church. It is the work of the church to provide what orphans need. But orphans need rearing. Orphans need education. Orphan needs recreation. So he says it is the work of the church to provide recreation. If his last statement is true. Now, if you fellas can't see that, then you needn't worry about getting up to heaven. All right, let's have the next. Cogdell says the church cannot rear children. Yet Cogdell says the church is the only institution needed to rear orphan children. In the debate, page 23, he says they can do everything that the children need. And yet, he has told us that the church cannot rear children. Now, it's not the work of the church to rear children, evidently. He says the church can do everything that involves its work. But he tells us it's not the work of the church to rear children. But children have to be reared in order to be provided for, Cogdell. Again, I say, surely you can see that. Let's have the next. All right, Cogdell says the church, the only organization to engage in child care. Yet he endorsed the effort of the Blindville elders to get orphan children out of their care into a home, another organization. He endorsed that in the Birmingham debate. All right, there's an instance of where the elders did have control of them, got them off of their hands. All right? Cogdell says elders cannot oversee anything but the flock, that is, the church. But he says elders can oversee orphans, non-members, providing every need. In the debate, page 23. Then they can oversee something besides the flock of the church, unless he thinks that these non-members are part of the flock. Are they? Do you believe in infant membership, Brother Cogdell? Now look, then he argues that the church has no obligation to orphans who are non-members. That is, he took that position over at Kennedy. All right? Now he says the church cannot function through anything but itself. Cogdell admits the church is not a home, that orphans need a home, that the church cannot operate as a home. Well, all right, then they must have another organization. Yet he contends that the church can supply every need of orphans. Now, what number is that? Let's have one more. Let's have the tenth. All right. Now, note, needs of destitute children, supervision, discipline, education, manual training, recreation. Cogdell says that it's sinful for the church to engage in support, all for the church to perform. Then he says, debate page 23, there is not one thing essential to such a program of relieving the destitute that cannot be provided by the congregation under the oversight of its elders. He means for the destitute, he's told us tonight, orphan children. He says that it's wrong to charge him with believing that the church can't take out of its treasure money to help those who are not Christians. That is, destitute children. And so, therefore, Brother Cogdell believes that the church can engage in that which he says that it's sinful for the church to engage in. Again, I say he is the most vulnerable man that I ever met in my life. I want you to see what he said he didn't want to debate. Let's have chart number 36, please. If our time will permit. Chart number 36. He said last evening, let's not talk about orphan children. Well, tonight he says they are definitely included because if the needy here include orphan children, then they are in our proposition. He said it's wrong to charge him with not believing that they can care for such. But last night he didn't want to talk about that. He said he didn't want to talk about means or methods. He said he didn't want to talk about a mere systematic arrangement. Yet, he calls this an arrangement here. I suppose it's a systematic one. At least he thinks so. He says he's not ready to talk about who has the oversight. It's not what the individual can do. It's not what other organizations can do. It doesn't involve the private home. He said what we want to talk about is the organization. And I showed you had one exactly like the orphan home, at least set up under the same statute, because he admitted that it was in harmony with it. Now then, note, Brother Cogdell believes that an individual can practice institutionalism without authority, but he denies that the church can practice it by authority. I think.
341 I've got it all copied here, and you can have a copy of the whole business. Then he changed his position and said that orphan home is a means by which the church restores a home which no longer exists for the child. Orphan homes and homes for the aged are functional organizations by which the church acts. The early church operated a home for the aged and the destitute widows. The scriptures are silent on the manner in which this home was operated. That the church is obligated to provide for widows and orphans and homes for the aged and orphans and Sunday schools are servants of the church, functional organizations by which the church acts. And that was in a series of articles in the Gospel Advocate of 1954, pages 845, 935, and 936. Again, in the Porter Woods debate, he said that orphan homes and homes for the aged are means the church uses to accomplish its own work. The church operates them. These homes are organizations different from organizational setup of the church, but are merely means the church uses. Just as Catholic orphanages carry out the functions of the Catholic Church, these homes carry out the functions of the church. These homes, organizations, do not usurp the functions of the church, but are means by which the church operates. It's sinful for the churches to contribute to a board, an organization that in turn establishes orphanages. That's the Porter Woods debate, pages 16, 49, and 50, 237, and 238. But he reversed himself again and had the right road going in another direction. The work of child care is not the work of the church as the church, such as the work of the home and not the church. If the church were a child care agency, orphan homes would be as unnecessary and sinful as the missionary society. The church is its own missionary society, but is not its own child care agency. Elders cannot oversee a home. Church cannot operate homes any more than parents can operate the church. Bowles, Tipton, Southern Christian are divinely authorized and state supervised. Sinful for churches to operate homes and elders to oversee them. The homes must be apart from the church and sinful if they're not. The church is not a charitable organization to care for orphans. Now these are the three positions that he has occupied. That is in 1957 in the Gospel Advocate, page 228 and 247. And in the Cardinal Woods debate, page 32, 75, and 159. Now, I could stand up here and use all the rest of my time reading these contradictory statements. And I'm not going to do it. They're here, and you can have a copy of them and read them at your leisure. I won't even represent the statements. I'm telling you these are the positions that he has taken, and here are the statements to verify it. And a copy of it has been prepared for everybody in this audience tonight. I want you to get one. And then I want you to ask yourself the question, what kind of a man in the face of this sort of a thing could stand up in front of people with any intelligence at all and say, I have a chance. I have a chance. You are a poor hand to talk about somebody's contradiction. I'll tell you, I'd have left that off if I'd have been you. I really would have. That isn't all. I could add to this that many more. He uses passages of Scripture just whichever way it suits him. He's on record in 1946 as saying that Acts 6 is a case of benevolent work and an example for all the churches for all time to come to follow. In the Cox Woods debate, and I have the tapes of that now, if you want to play tapes of another debate or a speech somewhere, we just go at it. In that you said it was a communal arrangement and that it was not an example of benevolence. What time did you mean what you said? And you made equivalent to that in a statement in the Cardinal Woods debate, that it was not true benevolence, but a communal arrangement in which everybody sold everything he had and then everybody went back to the same pot and dipped out what he needed. One time it wasn't and the other time it was. One time it is and the other it ain't, according to Guy Wood, but he doesn't change and he doesn't contradict himself. Now, if I've ever seen an unfair and a twisted, distorted bunch of quotations and statements, it's the one he's had on the screen up here. Every one of them was based upon the play of a term, a word. Just exactly like the proposition, of a child. When I talk about the church supporting only the saints, I mean the saints as opposed to angels. How do you classify children that aren't old enough, guy, to be Christians? How do you classify them? Are they angels? When I take the position that the church cannot, out of its treasury, take care of alien people, do you think that excludes children? Do you believe in the doctrine of total depravity? Are children born into the world when they're irresponsible as sinners? I can tell you in a minute what Roy Cogdell's position is on it. That's all on earth I'm under obligation to defend, and what it always has been. What it is and always has been. I deny, I'll be glad to deny it if he wants to affirm it. Oh, he said he's always denying and never affirming. Well, you won't deny what I'll affirm. My practice is not in question on this order, on this matter. And you can't write an affirmative proposition on the instrumental music question that any Christian church preacher in this country will deny. You've got to make a negative out of it. Because you sustain a negative position to it. And that's all a lot of byplay and palaver to arouse prejudice. If I sustained an affirmative proposition to the differences between us on the matter of benevolent organizations, I'd affirm it. And I will affirm what I teach. I will affirm what I teach. But I have to affirm a negative on this because my position with reference to it is a negative position. It's his position that the churches can establish benevolent organizations. Mine is that they can't. That it's unscriptural. There isn't any other way to affirm on the question. Since I'm in that position, except to affirm a negative. Just like I have to when I affirm on instrumental music. Well, I've affirmed that instrumental music is unscriptural because it's without scriptural authority. That's a negative affirmation of necessity. He understands that. Anybody else does. But he'll stop to think about it. But I want the brethren to bring in these mimeographed copies and have them ready for the audience. We'll just pass them out at the door, brethren. Brother Adams, see that they're back at the door and that everybody gets one as he goes out that wants one. And I want you to take them and ferret. And I've given the references. You can check the statements to see whether they're accurately quoted. Now he says that Cogdell believes that the church can provide for destitute children and that it has to be in a home. And therefore Cogdell believes the church can operate a home. Well, he means by the home a family relationship, and that it's the restoration of a family relationship. And I don't believe that it's possible for that kind of a home, a family relationship, to be restored. And I've said that all along, and he knows it. I believe that the church can see that the needs, the necessaries, that's benevolence, not the things that somebody might want or as good as somebody else has, but the necessary things of life can be provided for the destitute for whom the church is responsible, either among the saints, in harmony with divine principles, or children for whom the church might be responsible under proper circumstances. I don't believe the church can take care of all the destitute and orphan children on earth. I don't believe the church could have the resources possibly to do that. Nor do I believe it's the obligation of the church to do it. But that's a far cry from denying that the church under proper circumstances can provide a place for shelter, food and clothing and the necessary things of life and even personnel to take care of those who are unable to care for themselves, whether they're widows or whether they are children. The responsibility and the obligation of the church. I believe the church can fulfill its obligation to either one of them. And that's what I'm responsible for, is my position and what I believe. And knowingly, I've never said anything to the contrary or out of harmony with it. If I've said anything that sounds to somebody like it might be out of harmony with it, it's because it simply doesn't say what I intended to say, or it doesn't say to you what it says to me. And that's easily possible. But you look into the matter, and let him come up here with some equivocal or some unequivocal statement to the effect that I've ever made, that the church cannot take care of destitute children under any circumstance or provide for their care. And I don't believe he can produce it in Kennett, Missouri, or anywhere else. I just don't believe he can produce it. But can the church run a home? Now, guy, you need to go to work on a lot of the institutional craft, your brethren, the folks that you're in fellowship with that operate these homes. I have here a letter from the Tipton Orphan Home signed by Durwood Bogg, dated October the 11th, 1960. And he said, the elders of the church gave me your letter and asked that I send you a reply. The elders of the Tipton Church are the trustees of Tipton Home. They consider the work of Tipton Home as being equal with the Bible school work of the church. As elders of the church, they oversee the home in the same way they oversee the Bible school. Now, guy, you need to convert Tipton. You can't endorse that. You say that's not so. That's sinful. That's wrong. Elders operating a home. That's what the Tipton Church says. Now, here's another letter from the children's home out at Lubbock. And he says, the elders, Brother White writing it, the elders of the Broadway Church of Christ supervise the work at the children's home in the same way as our Texas Tech Bible Chair, the Sunday morning Bible classes, and other activities of the church. That's the Lubbock home. Out in Lubbock, Texas. We consider the organization of the home falls in the same category as any other activity, such as the Sunday morning Bible classes. Now, you need to convert Broadway guys. They don't agree with you. And you don't agree with yourself. And then here's another one from Grover Ross, superintendent of the New Mexico Christian Children's Home. And he said, the home is a part of the work. I'm one of the elders. Thus, we feel like we are over it, in it, under it, and in the middle of it. If we can be of further service, feel free to write. And just ahead of that paragraph, in the other one he said, I received your letter recently inquiring if the home here is under the elders as such or the elders serving as a board. Our elders are serving as elders. There's another unscriptural orphan home, guy. That's a Catholic institution out there. Now, you not only contradict yourself, you contradict a lot of your brethren. In March 27th, 1959, Earl Todd, for the elders at Tipton, Oklahoma, said, we appreciated your letter of March the 18th to answer your question concerning opposition as to the oversight or directorship of the home. As you stated, we consider the Tipton home here a work of the church, and we as elders oversee that part of the work. We hope this explains our position to you. Now, from San Benito, we have another one. L.W. Archibald for the elders. In reply to your letter we received recently, we the elders would like to make the following statement. The home Sunny Glen is set up under the oversight of the elders of the church in San Benito, Texas. In regard to the home's relationship to us, we are elders. Our relationship to the state of Texas in regard to the home puts us in the position of directors. But in regard to the relationship of the home, we are elders. Elders in a home, elders over a home. Well, that's what they say. And you know, to show further that these brethren have something that they don't know what to do with and they don't know how to defend, and that's the reason Guy has gone every route on earth, every possible way to try to defend. They've created something, they've brought something into existence that they can't find any scriptural authority for, and in all of the palaver now of his last speech. And all that he had to say, where is the passage that he produced any authority? Said you had that. You agreed with that, or are you going to go back on that? Where is the passage that produces any authority for the benevolent organizations built by the churches of Christ? It was as silent as the grave about it. Well, he will be the next time. Neither precept nor command, nor is there any approved example, nor is there any necessary influence. Now, Guy, if Roy Cogdell crossed himself up every time he uttered a breath and was a scalawag and a reprobate of the first class, that wouldn't yet mean that you have any Bible authority for these benevolent organizations that you're trying to defend. Well, you just pour it on Roy Cogdell all you want to and use all of your time to do it. But remember that you're under obligation to produce from the Word of God. If you mean what you say, divine authority for these benevolent organizations. We have here a home journal from the Maud Carpenter home. Recently, they took that home out from under the eldership of the Riverside Church in Wichita, Kansas, and they put it under a general board, and the statement of the president of that board said this: since each member of the board was recommended by the congregation to which he's responsible, we in turn look for guidance and support from those whom we serve. In part, your responsibility for this phase of the Lord's work is being discharged through us. They're representatives of the congregations that they serve on that board. So here you have a general board. But then they got scared about that arrangement after they put it under this general board made up of members who represent the various congregations that they serve on this board, and they put it back under board and all, I suppose, under another eldership over at Eastside in Wichita, Kansas. So first it is, and first it ain't again. And they don't know how to run it, nor do they know how to defend it. They can't produce any scriptural authority for it. None of any character or kind. They can haggle and quibble and palaver around and do a lot of double talk and rest a lot of off statements and try to show up somebody as being inconsistent and all of that kind of thing. But where is the passage? Where is the passage? We're crying for it in this proposition and debate, crying for the passage that produces authority from the scriptures for the organization that he's trying to defend. Not for a place to take care of orphan children. That isn't what we want. Here's what we're talking about. We believe in the work of relieving, and this is the work of the church. This is the work that God commanded the church to do when he said relieve. Here it is, whether it's a place that's needed, or shelter, or the necessities of life, or food, or clothing, or somebody to take care of. The church can do this, and I challenged him the other night to take the position, and he's been as silent as the grave about that. You know, when he gets through talking about what I've had to say, he said, now that complements his speech and everything. And there may be half of it that he said nothing of that. I asked him to deny, will you deny, that if there are destitute people for whom the church is responsible, and I don't care who they are, make any difference about that, that need a place for shelter. Will you deny that the congregation under its elders, by the ministration of its own deacons, through the resources furnished by its own members, can provide a place for the shelterless that it's responsible for? Will you deny that? Will you deny it? That God's organization can do it? Can God's organization furnish the necessary? Now, you know, he makes needs mean what they want or what they'd like to have. Well, I wanted a bicycle all of my life when I was a boy, but it wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary, and a television set's not necessary for a widow. Anybody else? The idea of classing a television set is one of the necessities of life. Now, that's a position he took last night. He's silent about that in his last speech, wasn't he? Completely silent about it. He said a husband is not a thing that is essential to the existence of a widow. But a television set is. She needs a television set. We're talking about the necessary things of life. Marbles and a sandbag are not the necessary things of life. And he says he doesn't believe the church can furnish entertainment or recreation, but he believes the church can spend its money and let somebody else take the money out of the Lord's treasury and buy it and furnish it. Well, what's the difference, guys? What's the difference in price? And the church can furnish personnel for supervision and care. It doesn't matter for whom the church is caring. And it doesn't matter what Roy Cogdell's position is. The church, God's organization, can do the work of relieving that God commanded it to do. And it's entirely sufficient to do it. And when I say that it can meet every need, I mean the necessary things of life. The things that in the realm of benevolence ought to be supplied. Not the things that somebody might aspire to. Or that somebody might want. That isn't what we're talking about, but the necessary thing. Turn this over and get the next one for me. These benevolent organizations, when built and maintained by the churches of Christ, are not only transgressive because they're without authority, they're digressive. They're not according to the divine pattern, and hence not the product of divine wisdom. They're therefore substitutional. They're the result of the will and the wisdom of man, and hence the ways of man. And here you have this benevolent organization about which we're talking. An organization that God did not design, that is not divine in its origin. And yet an organization that runs what he calls the home. That restores the home, that provides the home, and every charter that I've consulted of any of these institutions says so. That they run the home and provide it. You just run down the line. The purpose for which this corporation is formed is to maintain and operate a home. The purpose for which this corporation is formed is to establish and maintain a home. That's Turley. The first one was Sunny Glen. The purpose of this corporation, purposes are to provide a home. Bowles, Article 2. This corporation is organized to provide a home. Well, he said, now the platform on which I stand that supports me is not Guy Wood, no, and the organization is not the home that provides. Well, this is what the proposition's about, Guy. Doesn't make any difference what Cogdell thinks constitutes a home or what you think constitutes a home. Does the church have the right to build this in order that this might be provided? That's what we're talking about, and I leave it to the frankness and the honesty of this audience, to your own conscience in the matter as to whether or not he touched side, head, or butt of what he's supposed to discuss. He talked about everything else under heaven, except the thing that the proposition is about. Guy, why did you sign it? If you don't want to debate it, why don't you be honest and honorable enough to say so, and let's just not discuss it anymore if he's just not going to debate it. If you're not willing to defend that thing, why don't you get up here and make out like you ought? That's your obligation. Not this, but this. Whatever the restored home, as he calls it, may be. This thing here is not a restored home. A board of directors, a president, a vice president, a secretary, a treasurer. Now, they operate and they provide this, and that's what their charters say. And they are not the thing that they provide. And it isn't the church doing it. It isn't the church. It isn't this home. They provide the home. And they can't be the home and provide it too. There just isn't any way to do it. Yet that's exactly what every one of them are for. Now we're talking about Bowles Home, and we're talking about Child Haven, and when we mention these such as Bowles Home and Child Haven, we mean by name that is the organization. The following statements are used to prove it. The name of this corporation shall be the Tipton Orphans Home. The name of this corporation shall be the Church of Christ Home. The name of this corporation shall be the Sunny Glen Home. The name of this corporation shall be Bowles Home. Why, that's from every one of them. That's exactly what we mean. Such as Bowles Home, and the proposition means the organization. Bowles Home Incorporated, the organization. And the organization isn't the place. And the organization isn't the work of charity. The organization provides the place and provides people to care for. And they've got two families, too. Whoever the daddies are now. Whoever they are. They've got two because the same organization and the same superintendent run two different homes at different places. The guy said he wouldn't agree that that would be scriptural of Birmingham. That's the thing you can do. Look in the book and see. Look in the book and see. When churches contribute to one organization to establish different homes, he said it's an unscriptural law. You're going to have to convert Brother Olin to Bowles Home too. Well, you're going to be it out with your whole crowd. Before you get through it, you're not careful. You talk about somebody else disagreeing and somebody else being in. I want chart number 7. How much time do I have left? Fine. Turn chart number 7 right quickly. The work of the Lord's church, as we pointed out to you last night, is to evangelize the world with the gospel of Christ, to edify itself by the teaching of the gospel of Christ. And more than that, it is to do the work of relief. The work of the church is to do the work of relieving. In this work of relieving and in this work of evangelism and in this work of edification, God gave the church just one organization. And the same passage of Scripture, and I want you to go away from this debate tonight and every other night that you come remembering it, the same passage of Scripture that authorizes the church to build a human organization, a benevolent organization to do its benevolent work, will authorize the church to build a missionary organization to do its missionary work, and an edificational organization to do its edificational work. And when he proves one of them and cites the authority for one, he'll have the authority for all. And we'll just all get right and back up and apologize to the digressives and the Methodists that we've opposed all of these years. Well, they're human organizations because we've been wrong about them. If the Bible authorizes the church to be a human organization, the work of the church and the organization that does the work are two different things. Yes, sir. The congregation and its evangelism, just like the chartered institution and its work. But the work that is done doesn't constitute another organization. Why, he tries to make the work of relieving mean that there's got to be another organization. And he said, what about an arrangement? Well, the Bible teaches the church to do whatever it does in decency and in order. I suppose that'd be pretty good authority for an arrangement in any of the work of the church. It ought to be done decently and in order at least. And so the church, the congregation, as its own agency, does the work that God commands the church to do. And every one of them involves the place, necessary facilities, and personnel that is required in all of them. But when the church furnishes a place for a gospel meeting, that doesn't mean that it has another organization. When it furnishes the necessary facilities and the personnel for edification, that doesn't mean it has another organization. When it furnishes the place and necessary facilities and personnel, that doesn't mean it has another organization in the work of benevolence either, any more than it means that in the other three or in the other two. The congregation is its own agency and every other organization is excluded.
Alan, if I have time, how much more time do I have? Give me the next chart, number eight.
Number eight. In this matter, we want to contrast God's way and man's way and bring it to your attention. God's way is for the church. God's church, the congregation, the only organization God ever gave the church and the only one that the Bible authorizes. When Brother Woods gets through this debate, he will not have produced the authority for any other organization but this. And God intended for it to do the work of evangelism and the work of benevolence and the work of edification. But Brother Woods is contending for an organization that God says nothing about and the Bible does not authorize, a sponsoring church or a missionary society. The same in principle, old folks home and an orphan home, the incorporated body, the benevolent organization, to do the work of benevolence and the edificational society, the school, to do the work of edification instead of the church. And I thank you.
Brother Cogdell, brethren moderators, ladies and gentlemen, I am before you now for the final speech of the evening, and I entertain the hope that this may be a profitable and rapid passage of time for you. May I raise this question? What did Brother Cogdell say about my questions? How many of them did he answer? Now, it's the obligation of the affirmative to answer questions. From time immemorial, our debaters have felt obligated to answer questions that were asked by the opposition. I wonder just what you'd think of Brother Cogdell or of me. Were we engaged in a debate with a denominational preacher, and the preacher submitted a series of questions that we neglected, we would feel that he was simply dodging, evading the issue. Now, Brother Cogdell has as much time as I have. These questions were pointed and pertinent. And yet he made no reply to them whatsoever. Never mentioned them. Why didn't he? It wasn't because they were difficult, ambiguous, or hard to answer. The truth is, he's involved in so much inconsistency now that he doesn't want to get any further involved. That's the reason. Now, Brother Cogdell, I'm perfectly willing for this audience to decide whether you're meeting the issue on this or not. Please cite the scripture which authorizes the church to build a systematic arrangement. He's called upon me repeatedly to produce scripture for my position. My position is not under trial. If there are 100 things wrong with my position, that's not an issue here this evening. The issue is Brother Cogdell's position right? That's the point under consideration here tonight. That's the reason I say that these fellows never affirm anything. They always want us to get in the affirmative. He repeatedly stated, where is the scripture that authorizes your position? Well, I presented passage after passage and chart after chart he made no reference to. I wasn't obligated to do that at all. I could have got up before you and been perfectly legitimate in saying, my position is not an issue. It's yours, Cogdell. What are you going to do about it? And yet he spends his entire time as if I were in the affirmative. Well, why? Because they have no position to defend. What did he say about my citation of the custody matter? Not a thing on earth. I showed your friends that it's impossible to have the situation he describes on the first chart that he presented, because it necessitates the taking of the custody of children. And he said that the church can't do that. No wonder he didn't say anything about it. Now then, let's have the lights out just for a moment. And we'll have the question there that we have presented for tonight. Here is something that I'd like to find out from Mother Carter. How he can come prepared tomorrow night to answer this question. Will Coggle plainly state his position or take a position on this question? The church does have an obligation to offer children. Is that true or false? The church does not have an obligation to orphan children. Is that true or false? Now, Brother Coggle, we want to find out what your position is on this question. We insist that tomorrow night you deal with that specifically. Now, let's have the lights back on, please. Some months ago, I was engaged in a debate with a holiness preacher in a New Mexico town. During that debate, the woman pastor of the congregation passed out prepared material trying to answer the arguments that I was making. Here is an evidence on the part of Brother Coggle that he can't answer me in this debate with what has been presented. And he wants to put in your hands a lot of material for you to read outside the debate. Well, that's all right with me. He can't pile up enough to cover up his inconsistencies. Again, I say, even if every statement he makes regarding it is true, that doesn't help his case one particular here tonight. Because it's his position that's in issue. But now he says that I took the position in times past that homes operated by elders were scriptural. I believe that men who are elders of the church can operate homes. I deny that they're operating them as elders. I think that a man may be an elder of the church, the president of a bank, the head of his house, and the member of a board of an orphan home. And I can produce you statement after statement from these homes where they state in their literature that the elders are directors of the home or trustees of the home. I have no objection to that at all. I have no objection to such statements. The thing about it is that when I made that speech back then, I believed in the existence of orphan homes. I still believe in them and am defending them. Back there when I made that statement, Brother Coggle believed in orphan homes too and was using them. He called up Bowles' home and asked him to take 5 children from a place where he was preaching. He signed his name to an application blank that he said that the children ought to be put in Bowles' home and ought to be supported there by the churches of Christ. Brother Coggle believed it back then, just like all of us did. I still believe it. Now, you remember this, friends, when you're reading this material, Brother Coggle has summarized the statements and put his own construction on them. You'll remember that whatever he puts in your hands, that I believe that orphan homes had a right to exist. I still do. Coggle believed it then. He doesn't tonight. That's the difference between us. You keep that in mind, please. He said, I took the position that Act 6 was an example of benevolence. Well, I still believe it is. I don't think it's a pattern for us to follow today in providing for people. I think it's an instance of benevolence because they did good. Benevolence is doing good. We don't think it's necessary today to sell our property. It might under comparable conditions. But I do not take the position that that constitutes a method or procedure today. But I'd like to point out to you this in that connection. That in that provision, when they took the money and gave it to these needy widows, they didn't incorporate those widows into the church as a part of the congregation and the elders oversee them as a part of the work of the congregation, that is, oversee their home. They still maintain the distinction that we're contending for tonight, the church and the home. He said, he hinted at the idea. He didn't say it, but he hinted at the idea that children may be saints. Brother Coggle, I ask you plainly and positively, does the church sustain an obligation to an abandoned baby that is left on the steps out here? Answer that question now. That'll get it to us.
Oh, he says, what passage can I cite for providing a home for our children? What passage of Scripture did I cite along that line? Well, I would cite the same passage that you would, Brother Cogdell, since you say that you believe that the church sustains an obligation to send. Now, whichever passage it is that you produce, I believe it. You said you believe that. So when you produce it, that'll be my passage too. If you want some passages, James 1 and 27. 1 Timothy 5 and 16. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. Acts 20 and 35. Mark 14 and 7. I put those on a chart the very first night here. And he made no reply to them. And he gets up here and tells you that I've made no mention. He says, I believe that the church can provide. Said, surely Brother Woods would not deny that the church can provide a place for the needy, can supply food for them, and shelter, and can do it as a part of the work of the church. He said, I believe that. Now I want to ask you this question, Brother Cogdell. Inasmuch as the church can do that and provides the place and it constitutes a group of people, does that group of people become an entity apart from the church? Is it a home or is it a church? Now, we've asked him that question repeatedly. We've received no answer. We believe the church can do that. But I point out to him this, that there's more involved than just merely a place and food and shelter. There's education. There's education in the case of children. Now, he said in the Kennett speech that he didn't believe the church could provide education. He said he was glad that the state did that. Well, there are some things that the state won't provide in some states that are involved, such as providing pencils and notebook and ink and so on. Can the church provide that for these children in the educational field? Brother Cogdell said, I took a position last night that a TV set was an essential for a widow. Well, I didn't remotely say anything of the kind. The point was this. Brother Cogdell had a chart up here in which he said that in harmony with 1 Timothy 5 and 16, that a sister was to provide for a mother, that the church be not charged. And he pointed out correctly that the church then, in the absence of the daughter, where there was no daughter to provide, could provide the same thing for the mother. I said, yes, that's my position exactly, but that's not a church that the daughter provides. Well, he said the church can provide everything the daughter can. I said, the daughter can provide a mother a television set. Could the church? He had said that the church couldn't provide entertainment. Now, that was the context in which the statement was made. Now let's have, please, his chart number. Well, I put it down, the chart number 2A. I believe that that's the one that we want. Chart number 2A. I might say, well, they're getting a chart ready, that Brother Cogdell made the statement that it can't be a home and provide. That which does the providing is separate apart from that which is a home. That was Brother Cogdell's argument here in connection with this. I'd like to call his attention to the fact that in 1 Timothy 5 and 8, Paul said that if one doesn't provide for his own, he's worse than an infidel. Now, according to Cogdell, the one who does the providing is no part of that which he provides. Yet it says that he provides for his own. Provides is for his own family is actually the significance of it. Yet according to Cogdell, the fellow's not any part of his family because he provides for the family. Now I wonder if that sage logic is quite convincing to you, brethren. That was the essence of this business right here. Brother Cogdell, I hope that you improve the method by which you arrange your charts in the next debate we have. I say that with all kindness, sir. I'm not reflecting on you or your charts. I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of my side. Now, the first thing that Brother Cogdell did in connection with this was to point out that there's nothing in line with this in connection with the authorization for a home in the Bible. May I point out to you, friends, what we have emphasized repeatedly on last evening, that this conforms to the legal aspects of it. One of the brethren who participated in the service tonight preaches for a congregation. Brother Cogdell, I assume, holds meetings there. At least he's in good standing with them. That is an incorporated church. Cogdell takes the position that the corporation is one thing, and that which is incorporated is something else. In which case, then that church has a separate organization. I don't believe that. But at any rate, to comply with the law of the land, they got exactly this, or at least that in essence. They'd have a board. They'd have to have board members. They'd have to have board members that serve as president, vice president, and secretary. An incorporated setup. That's down here in Russellville, Alabama. They've got that down there. Now, then, why is it that this is all right for a church to do that? But it's wrong for a home to do that. Why is it? If one is wrong, the other's wrong. If one's right, the other is right. Brother Cargill, you have not shown the difference. Now, let's have his chart number 7. And again, prepare yourself for a good long way. I would have been glad if Brother Cogman had taken up our arguments. He wouldn't. I guarantee you it wouldn't take so much time to get them before me. These charts were as hard to understand as they are to get to. We'd all have a problem with them, wouldn't we? If you start teaching the church to do its duty, why, then they will be glad to do it. You preach anyism so long, they won't support you. Now we have here chart number 7. Chart number 7. The work of the church. Now I ask him in this connection, where is the place in this setup here for the home that he says that the elders can pay in order for a child to be taken care of? It. Now, let's see that he says that. We turn over here to page 9. They can oversee the care, that is, the elders, when they place a child in a private home, a destitute child, with the agreement that they will pay that home to take care of that child. The child is still under the control of the elders of the church. Now, then, where is that? Where is that place? Is it right here? All right, then, it's using another organization to do its work, isn't it? What is it, the work of the home or the church to care for that child? Well, it's the home that's performing the service, though, isn't it? Then the church can use another organization to do the work of child care, can't it? What can we buy from those homes? Now, you see, friends, he has two sets of rules that are applied here. Now, right here is where I put the home that he's got here. But when he puts it there, he's got another organization. That home consisting of a father and mother is not the church. They may be members of the church, but it's a family relationship. And it's a divine relationship, and they're performing the proper function. Brother Cogdell is correct in saying they have to be put in that type of institution because the church can't perform those functions. He says it's not the function of a church to rear children. Well, I don't believe it is either. They got to be in a home. Now, what difference would it make whether it was a home that had a father and mother, or two women, two old maids that is running it, or two brothers in the flesh, or six brothers in the flesh, or six brethren in the spirit? What difference would it make? At all, if they had more than 7 children, they'd have to get a license from the state. When you got that, you got an order. That's what I'm defending here in this debate tonight. Now, is that chart 8? This is chart number 8. I get to do this because I answer all of his charts.
I suggest to you again that we have the obligation of the individual here stated. The passage clearly is pointing out our obligations. Our obligations as Christians.
Now again here, friends. Look what he said. Here's a contradiction to what he had just said to us from the floor here. He points out to us that the church or the congregation is God's way. He means by that it's God's way for performing the ministry. All right, what? It is all sufficient in evangelism. In the levels, I believe that the church is all sufficient to accomplish every work that God assigned to the church. But Brother Cogdell has admitted that the church can place children in a home and use another organization. Well, now, if this is right, he's wrong in the statement of the debate. Because if it's all sufficient, what's the church doing putting it in another organization?
If it can't put it in another organization, then the church is not designed
to perform all the acts of benevolence. It may supply the money, 1 Timothy 5 and 16. Yet it cannot supply the care. Let me point out this to you. If you were to have a bunch of children abandoned on the steps out there, you move them into this building. You provide living quarters for them in the rear here somewhere. Beds and stoves and so on to take care of them. That wouldn't be the church operating. That would be a home operating in the church building. Because God gave to the home the responsibility of child care. He gave to the church the responsibility for that.
He said that we have an example at Bowles of the board operating two homes out of nine. Cardinal Brother Coggle, if a father and mother lived back in a good many years ago and they had an old log house and they had a room off out a little ways from the house and had some of the family out in that house, they'd have two different homes. They'd be running two homes down there. Not just how far from the first room can the other children get without becoming two homes, Brother Coggle? Now, here's the setup. If we had a centralized board by which the money was sent to this board, and then this board sent it to the brethren or operating bowls home, and then sent more money to Tipton and so on, then you'd have a setup we all for. That's what we're against. I didn't say anything that even remotely sounded like I was opposed to that setup. I'm not. They have one home. They have the children in two different places. Now, they have some of them on the campus down there at Bowles. They have some of them over in one cottage and another in another. Those are separated. Why don't you say that? How many you got of those, Gail? Oh, I don't want you to say they got 14 homes. It'd be just as true. Because they got 14 places the children are living in. Now, why don't you say that, Brother Coggle? That wouldn't have sounded good, would it? No. You couldn't reflect on the home in that way. Now, I've covered his speech, friends, item by item. Again, I remind you, what has he said about a single child that I've had? What has he done with the question? What did he do about the custody matter, an essential thing? Not one single solitary thing. Why? Because he couldn't. He didn't know anything to say about it. There isn't anything to say. I've shown you tonight that there are two institutions involved, the church and the home. How much now? I've shown you, secondly, that the church has an obligation to needy people. I've shown you that the place where needy people are to be provided for is in a home. I've shown you that that home is divine. And that the church sustains an obligation. Now then, I want us to examine a few more charts. Let's have here chart 38. I want you to see. Now, Brother Coggle has talked to this.
It seems to me the main emphasis in 38 is the attention that's given to fairness in the distribution. There was a
chart 38
about this distribution.
I want you to see here what's happened there. Turn our lights on.
And also, there's some attention given as to who would oversee.
Now, Brother Coggle has seen fit to talk about.
He said,
brethren moving around in position. I hear, first of all, we have Brother Paul Wallace, who opposes the herald of truth. That is, he's preached against it in the past. Then a little closer over here to the brink, we have Brother Tant. Brother Tant, he never has repudiated the music hall meeting in Houston. That's the meeting in which Brother Coggle took the position that it was a demonstration of how 20 churches could work together without any sort of unscriptural organization. The North Hill Church received the funds from the other churches. The North Hill Church oversaw the work. He was the preacher. But then he repudiated it in the Birmingham debate. And there's Brother Douthit and Brother John T. Lewis. They believe that the cooperation of the newspaper article in the Birmingham deal was acceptable and permissible. And then we get on over here. Brother Coggle at this point still believed that it was right to assist those who are not members. At least he didn't take the position that it was sinful in that debate. He talked about helping the destitute. It made no distinction. Now he takes the position that the church can help saints only. We're confused as to what he means by saints only. We haven't figured out yet. We don't know whether that includes babies or not. We haven't been able to find out here in two nights. I don't know whether Roy Parker believes that the church can help a tiny baby. Does anybody in this audience know if he can? If so, all right, what is it? Can he or not? That's what I've said. That's exactly what I said. I can't find out whether he thinks the saint is a child or not. Now, that's the point. Does anybody here know that? I don't. I don't know what his position is. So then, watch now. Down on this level here, we have Hathaway, the no cups and no teachers. Garrett, the no, get us in focus, if you will. No located preacher. Miller's no cups. And Summer, no colleges. But
Here's Brother Cogdell down here.
The church can help saints only. Now, whoever the saints only are, that certainly doesn't include some man who is not a Christian. In other words, if there were some fellow, say, for example, a man whose wife was a Christian, but for some reason or other he never obeyed the gospel, or he might have attended church regularly. A man who gives, there are frequent instances of where some fellow like that would give liberally to the church, give many hundreds of dollars through the years to the church, and then misfortune comes to him, and that he can't look to the church to turn around and help him, even though he lived next door to it. He couldn't do it. Even though he had given hundreds of dollars to the church himself, if he fell in need, he couldn't get a penny out of the treasury, according to these fellows. Now, he can drink their water at the back because that's a convenience. But if he is starving for water, he couldn't get any because it'd be wrong to help him. That'd be benevolence if he were starving for water. If you wanted to give him some heat for convenience, that'd be all right. But if it was a necessity, if he's freezing, you'd have to let him freeze to death unless there's some individual come around to help him. I know that's what he means. I know he can't wiggle out of that. Our friends, you get it. The truth of the business is that most of these brethren who hold to this view believe that the church hasn't got a single obligation to a tiny orphan baby. That's their position. All right, let's have chart number 102. Now, I know that this is the position of many of them. I believe with all of my heart that it's the position of Roy Cogdell, too. I look here. This is based upon my conception of his speech at Kennett, Missouri. They believe that you can take... Now, I'm representing their position. Now, Cogdell may want to repudiate if he wants to, but this is what I believe that is Kennett's speech, and I'm going to let you decide tomorrow night. Take money out of the church treasury to buy fertilizer to feed the grass in the preacher's yard, but you can't take the money out of the church treasury to buy milk to feed an orphan child. That's what most of these fellas believe. I know it. That's what they publish repeatedly in the Gospel Guardian in their bulletins. I know that's their position. I don't crawfish and don't deny it. That's the truth. Holt took the position in the debate with Wallace. Brother O'Neill took that position with Albert Hill in the tapes. I heard that with my own ears. I know that to be the truth. He's advocated it over the radio with Brother Nichols down in Jasper, Alabama. That's correct, isn't it, Brother Nichols? Roy Cogdell made the statement in Kennett, Missouri. At least all of us interpreted it in that way. I'll let you decide whether the interpretation was correct. That's the position, ladies and gentlemen. Now, why he wants to crawfish on it here tonight, I don't know. It isn't to his credit that he does. It is to his credit if he wants to repudiate these with whom he stands on it. I'll be glad if he'll do that. I hope he will. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the position that you support when you support these anti-preachers. Exactly. All right? Let's have now chart number 102A. I know it hurts, but then the thing about this, you ought to be honest enough to stand with your convictions. If I believed it, I wouldn't try to switch out of it when I got in difficulty on it. All right? Now, here are a bunch of children from an orphan home. It's a good thing that some people have some of the milk of human kindness in them that will supply milk and food that they need. All right? Now, let's have chart number 28. Chart number 28. Now, here is what we're trying to find out from Brother Cogdell. What is this arrangement? He speaks of an arrangement that the elders can provide. What is that arrangement? It's not a home because he says in Walking by Faith that it is Catholicism for elders to oversee a home. He says that's Catholicism. All right, it's not a church. Because he says the church can't engage in any secular activity. Walking by Faith, pages 8 and 9 and 42. He stated that also time and again. Yet he says that the only thing that the church can build is another church. That's the reason why, friends, that they have no orphan homes that they endorse. That's the reason why they have no plans to start one. That's the reason why that if they were to start one, the same objections that they make against the ones that exist would level against the one that they would establish. So they prayed about believing in providing for the needy, yet they have no plan regarding it. And when they're asked what their plan is, they say that they're not under obligation to present any until they get into debate like this, and we can't find out just who is the object of the church's care. Up to this moment, we do not know. All right?
Now, let's start in with a few more of the contradictions, as long as our time will allow. How much? All right. Will Cogdell plain... Well, that's one we've had already. Let's have the contradiction. Cogdell argues that the church, the local congregation, is the only organization needed by orphans. Yet the needs of orphans include hospitalization, surgery, nursing, physical therapy, medical aid. Cogdell contends that it's sinful for elders to oversee any functions except those of the church. Now, is it the function of the church to provide nursing, surgery, hospitalization, physical therapy, medical aid, and so on? If it is, then the church can operate a hospital. Ask him the question, Cogdell. Can the church operate a hospital? If the church can provide every need that the needy have, then it follows that the church can provide these needs. But one of these needs is surgery, hospitalization, nursing. That's hospital care. Can the church provide it? I don't think so, but I think the church can supply the money with which others may when needy people are in such position. Let's have the next. All right, Cogdell says the church is all-sufficient in child care. He's had a chart to that end. Now, he tells you that I'm misrepresenting him on this. Again, I say I'm not. I'm taking his statements from his books, and I'm giving the citation on it. Cogdell says the church is all-sufficient in child care. Yet Cogdell says the church may buy services of other organizations. Now, whose work is it that's bought, the church or the other organization? If it's the church's work, then the church ought to be doing it without having another organization. If it's the other organization's work, what's the church doing buying it? Now, he said that he couldn't understand that. I think a lot of people here can tonight. All right, let's have the next. He says elders may oversee nothing larger or smaller than a local congregation. That's his phraseology. Walking by Faith, page 17. Cogdell says elders may oversee a home for orphans. Debate, page 23. Now, those statements are in hopeless conflict. Now, you remember this, ladies and gentlemen, that this represents the man who's in the affirmative. He was the one that was to try to justify his position. He has failed to do so. Let's have the next one, please. All right. Cogdell says that it's Catholicism for elders to operate a home. That's Walking by Faith, page 40. Yet he says this, the only way that orphans can be provided for, that the church can operate it, and that it is not the church, that it's the home, yet the church can't establish anything but another church. The elders can't oversee anything but another church. Yet the elders can't rear children. Yet children must be reared. Yet the church has to do it. Yet the church can't do it. That's his position. All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Cogdell has failed to sustain his proposition. He's gone down in defeat, not because Brother Cogdell's not an able or capable man. He is. But because he sustains a false position. And I'm sure that in your honesty and fairness, you'll be able to see these matters tonight. I'm glad to leave them with you on that basis. I thank you.